Test, test.
But the entire side of the album was a slowed down recording of Sam Glamis reciting a string of numbers.
I called him Lord Dunmore for the rest of the year. It was a nickname I gave.
Send me the key. I'll do it for you.
It's longitude and latitude.
20 years ago, a young man went missing. His name was Alistair Glamis. His high school physics teacher, who was also my teacher, remembers him by a different name. A nickname inspired by Alistair's unique interest, to say the least, in the last royal governor of Virginia, John Murray, the 4th Earl of Dunmore. A man more commonly known to history as Lord Dunmore. A man who was also famous in a certain part of Scotland for building a gigantic stone pineapple. A pineapple whose location was pinpointed through a series of numbers uncovered from a vinyl record Alistair left behind for me. Yep. That is where I am at. I figured this all out. And it sounds ridiculous. Because it is ridiculous. And it is also clear now that I was distracted. Throughout this colorful investigation, I overlooked something much more important. Something that was staring me right in the face. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 4, Blindness. In the weeks since I started this audio project, I have followed a series of odd paths. Sometimes I felt as though I was being led down a dark tunnel with no light on the other side. Even now, I can't tell whether the discoveries I just reviewed are leading me somewhere, or are they pure distractions? Twists and turns leading me nowhere? At times, it feels like I'm truly unraveling or decoding some kind of puzzle left behind by Alistair himself. But yet, I still know so little about him as a person. He, the young man who disappeared, still remains my greatest mystery. Despite this, these connections are too amazing and strange to be ignored. For this episode, I'm going to start with a point I promised to cover in my last episode. That is the gigantic stone pineapple. Here's my wife Carol to tell you more about the pineapple.
So I took a graduate class on the development of art societies during the Enlightenment, but I looked most of this up this week. So, the Royal Academy was founded in 1768. A guy named William Chambers played a big role in that. In the minutes for the first General Assembly of the Academy, it says, and I'm reading here, that sometime towards the latter end of November of 1768, Mr. Chambers waited upon the king and informed him that many artists of reputation, together with himself, are very desirous of establishing a society that should more effectively promote the arts of design. So, he was appointed the Academy's first treasurer under President Sir Joshua Reynolds, a painter. So please know, he's the guy you mentioned in the last episode as having painted the portrait of Lord Dunmore.
Right, the kilt painting.
I'm guessing that everyone in Scotland wore kilts back then.
So what does this have to do with the pineapple?
Oh, right. Well, William Chambers designed it.
He designed what?
He designed Lord Dunmore's pineapple.
After Carol shared this bit of information, I admittedly stopped recording for a bit. The whole thing just seemed so out of left field. The pineapple identified in the recording of Sam Glamis was designed by a critical individual in the English-speaking arts community of the 18th century. And my investigation of the disappearance of Alistair Glamis, while getting me no closer to understanding Alistair himself, was driving me incomprehensibly closer to this specific time period and Scotland and a pineapple. But why? Carol convinced me to start recording again. She said she had more to share.
So, when is a pineapple more than a pineapple? Did you ever think that you'd be asking yourself that question?
I don't know. Am I wasting my time with all this?
I don't know the answer to that, but I can share what else I learned about pineapples.
Okay, share away.
The Dunmore pineapple was originally built to be a summer house, a garden retreat constructed as a birthday present to Dunmore's wife, Susan. I expect a pineapple for my birthday, by the way.
Okay.
It appears that pineapples have been a thing dating all the way back to Christopher Columbus, who brought them to Europe in 1493. They immediately became a symbol for wealth and hospitality and return.
What do you mean by return?
Well, it was a tradition among sailors to put a pineapple on their gatepost to announce their return home from sea. I guess Lord Dunmore is the ultimate example of that tradition. He did a little more than just place a pineapple on his gate. He built himself one.
He had William Chambers design a gigantic 45-foot stone fruit on his estate.
Exactly.
Let's play a game called Good Cop, Bad Cop. You can be the good, I will be the bad. Let's find the lovers who broke our hearts. Ask them how they sleep now we're apart. And even if they answer, we're not done. We will pull out our Tommy gun and shoot them down just for fun.
As Zachary Pratt, my old physics teacher, made clear, Alistair had more than an idle interest in Lord Dunmore, and since the series of numbers on the vinyl record pinpointed the location of Lord Dunmore's pineapple by way of longitude and latitude, I can only assume that this interest ran deeper than Zachary Pratt could have imagined. But luckily, someone else is on the case. About a week ago, I was contacted by Tom Allegost, my audio engineer friend, who originally uncovered the voice of Sam Glamis on the vinyl record, the one that was found in the Shags album slipcase. As it turned out, he was alerting me to a bit of an investigation of his own. After pulling all that he could from that single record, he decided on a whim to stop by the thrift shop where I donated the rest of the records. I didn't mention it in any of my previous three episodes of this podcast, but I had done the same thing over a month ago. As in, I tried to get back those records. When I visited, the guy behind the counter explained that the store was part of a community of thrift shops. Any donated stuff was put through a central processing warehouse over in Nashua, New Hampshire, before being redistributed to the various shop locations, of which there are three in New Hampshire and three in northern Massachusetts. At the time, it seemed like tracking down the other albums would be an impossible task, so that's where I gave up. I found other things to distract me. But tracking down those other records is exactly what Tom Allegost endeavored to do.
Yeah, I want to get my hands on the rest of those records. I think it's safe to assume I'd find more weird stuff on them, don't you think?
I don't even remember what most of the records were.
What do you remember?
I remember there was a copy of the Mary Poppins soundtrack. The old one with Julie Andrews and another
I spent a while describing what I could remember.
Sure.
I don't know.
And just during that one conversation, Tom was able to identify two more. I guess he really does know his music. The albums Tom identified by my memories and fairly poor descriptions were the following. John Denver's Greatest Hits by John Denver. Walt Disney's Mary Poppins, featuring Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke. Whipped Cream and Other Delights by Herb Albert. I mean Alpert, it's with a P. And the Tijuana Brass. And finally, Among My Souvenirs by Bing Crosby, whose cover I described to Tom from memory as a guy with a funny hat whispering to a dog. Look that one up. It turns out my memory was right on with that one. Surprisingly, Tom was able to find that very record. He called me back 2 days later with the news.
I did it. I found Bing Crosby. Along with the shop where you originally dropped off the stuff, I hit up two more that are fed by that warehouse in Nashua. It turns out that only a few of them take records at all. Lo and behold, there's a copy of Bing Crosby's Among My Souvenirs sitting right among the stacks at the shop in Bedford. I picked it up for a dollar, took it home, and tried to play it. It's a bunch of static. I can't make any sense of it. Sounds like an Alistair record, right? The last album was fun to pull apart, so I just digitized this one an hour ago, and I'm going to start going through it slowly, see what I can pick out.
So that conversation was close to a week ago. I haven't heard from Tom yet, but I feel like he'll be in touch if and when he finds something worth sharing. And then I'll share with you immediately. Now, I would like to turn to the bit I alluded to at the beginning of this episode. The part about this investigation that I overlooked. First, I'm going to play an unfortunate conversation I very recently had with my longtime friend, Ricky Rawls. I thought about not incorporating this conversation into the episode, but I think you'll need to hear it in order to understand that you might not hear from Ricky on my podcast again. You see, I started calling Ricky a week ago. I wanted to tell him about the Bing Crosby record, and I was hoping for some kind of update on Alistair's Key, which I had sent him in the mail. He was going to visit the Barton post office to see if the postmaster had any ideas on the key's origin. It all seems so trivial now. At first, I was worried because Ricky wasn't responding. And that's just not him. Ricky finally did respond with a brief text. That's also just not him. The text said, and I quote, "Sorry for the lack of response. A lot of stuff going on. I'll call tomorrow. Need to get my head straight." I finally got Ricky on the phone yesterday, and this is what he said.
"I'm having problems with my eye."
"What do you mean?"
"I can't see out of one of my eyes."
"What? You're kidding."
"No joke, man. The doctors thought maybe blood vessels in my eyes leaked fluid or blood or something under my retina. But now they're talking glaucoma."
"Is there anything I can do to help?"
"I don't know. No. Sally's got me taken care of. I just gotta find her."
"Sally?"
"My girlfriend."
Sorry, I didn't know you were seeing anyone."
"Well, you know, you don't really come around that often, do you?"
"I'm sorry."
"No, I'm sorry. It's me. It's just a mess. I'm a mess. I don't mean to take it out on you. It's been really cool reconnecting. All my buddies listen. I'm like a big star now. You know, a big star for Barton, New Hampshire. Listen, I'll send you your key back."
"Did you go to the post office?"
Really? You're just pulling people along, Johnny. You know what you should really do is throw the key away. Do us all a favor. You're spinning wheels. I listened to your episodes. I haven't heard a single new thing about the actual kid, Alistair Glamis, the guy who went missing. Remember him?
I'm sorry you feel this way. Ricky. Ricky, are you still there?
Yeah. I'm still here. I used it, Johnny.
What do you mean?
I used the key to look inside other people's mailboxes. I've been going to the post office every day.
I'm recording this, remember?
I don't care. In fact, I want you to use it in the show. For me. Tell them what I've been doing. I've been slipping the key into random boxes while nobody's looking.
I don't know what to say.
I saved your life once. When you ran away, I saved your life. Right? That happened?
Yeah, of course it happened.
So don't cut this out. Play this for me. Tell the others that it needs to stop. I can stay here.
What's going on here, Ricky?
It's something. I'm going now, Johnny. I'm going to the basement of the library.
And that's when he hung up. I called him back a few times, but he still, to this day, won't take my call. I don't know how to get to him, save for driving up to Barton, which is hours away. Ricky isn't on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or anything. So that's it, I guess. I'm cut off. And I feel terrible. I've spent the past 48 hours wondering if I should just get in my car and drive up to Barton and make sure he's okay. I was so wrapped into my little project that I completely lost track of Ricky. I mean, he said he had a girlfriend. I really had no idea. If you're listening, Ricky, then I'm sorry about what's happening to you. I imagine that sudden onset blindness, even in one eye, is terrifying. I'm sure the fear is making you do and say things you normally wouldn't. I wish I could help you. Please, let me help you. Look, I'm using my show to reach out. It would be an understatement to say that I am worried about Ricky Rawls. I can't really bring myself to say much more than that. Instead, I'm going to take his criticism to heart and end this episode with something I learned about Alistair Glamis. I have really been digging these past few days, looking for something, anything new about Alistair's life, his real life. None of this 18th century history stuff. I've been so caught up into all this pineapple nonsense that I forgot about the real kid. And what I want to report is that I overlooked something very important. Alistair and his father, Sam, have zero internet presence. I'm sure you've noticed. I was contacted by a listener recently named Candace Haygood. She asked a very simple question. Why do Alistair and his father Sam have zero internet presence? I had no answer other than Alistair disappeared 20 years ago and Sam was old. But there might be a better reason why I have so little to report about their actual lives. And it is for that reason that I decided to take a further step and request the public deed of the Glamis land. Admittedly, I got the idea from looking at all the maps online after Carol pinpointed the longitude and latitude of Lord Dunmore's pineapple. I contacted the town offices of Barton, New Hampshire. I didn't expect to find anything, but I discovered that the land where the late Sam Glamis lived in Barton was never owned by a man named Sam Glamis, ever. It was previously owned by a man named Samuel Badley. What this tells me is that the name Glamis was a pseudonym, and that perhaps, and I know this is a leap, perhaps Alistair and his father were in hiding. When I searched for Sam Badley, only one thing came up: a book being sold on eBay. It looks like it only sold for a few dollars. But the strange thing is that this particular eBay seller has a history of selling only one product: a book by author Sam Badley entitled The Incredible Being. Is this the same Samuel Badley that changed his name to Glamis and took his son to the great North Woods of New Hampshire? I don't know, but I messaged the eBay seller, and I'll let you know if he or she responds. So yes, there are so many questions, so many paths, and I don't know where to turn. I can't stop thinking about Ricky. I don't know whether to stop this project entirely and just drive up there. To Barton, I mean. Ricky just didn't sound like he wanted to speak to me. And I don't get it. I don't get any of it. Ricky, please give me a call. I don't know what you're going through, but I want to help. I will do anything to solve this. I'm just sitting here, behind a microphone, waiting. In the meantime, thanks to Tom Allegost, my wife Carol, Ross Boyd, Prom Queen, and Ben von Wildenhaus. Finally, thanks to Ryan Fitton and Jeremy Murphy for the support. This show is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk soon.
Partners in Crime Media.